Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
You know, it's an issue that's not going away. And it's an issue of homelessness. And how do you deal with homelessness when it comes to our individual cities? And you have cities all over the valley that are struggling to try to figure out what do you do with people who, I'm not trying to make light of it, literally sleep on the streets.
Well, what you do with folks who live on the street might have to change thanks to a new ruling by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Now, this happened in September, and it was in light of a case out of Boise, Idaho. Now, the Ninth Circuit also oversees Arizona, so the ruling that they came up with in the Boise case could have an impact here in Arizona. And what the ruling was is that Boise has no right to cite people for violating its, quote, urban camping law, that the law is unconstitutional and enforcement amounted to cruel, unusual punishment. Now, here in Phoenix, there is an urban camping law. You've got other cities who have started to change the way they enforce or even have the laws. So Tempe stopped enforcing the law. Glendale changed its law. Surprise is working on the law, and Phoenix is keeping it the same.
I had an interesting conversation, and it was I was at a call it a speech that was given by former Phoenix police chief Daniel Garcia. Okay, this is about 2-3 years ago, right? And this was when he was chief, and he was talking about this very issue. And I thought he made an interesting point because I was like, well, I wonder where Phoenix PD comes down on this, and I think this is a relatively consistent position. He said we don't have a lot of options when we're called by citizens. And we're called to enforce the laws, okay? And he said, downtown Phoenix is a great example. There's some parks. Then they have posted signs that you can't be in this park past 9 p.m., 10 p.m., whatever it might be. And these are the entire reason these signs are up is to keep homeless people from sleeping in the parks. And he said, here's the problem. And he said, this was coming from a police chief, and I thought this was interesting. We respond. We have a person, an individual sleeping in the park in violation of city ordinance. This person already has a variety of issues, which has brought them to the point of sleeping outdoors in a park in the city of Phoenix. When you make us, when we are forced to arrest them, take them to jail, process them, and charge them, we've just added to the problem. We've dug the hole deeper for this homeless person to get out of. And he said, I don't think, this was Chief Garcia said, I don't think the police are the best way to deal with the homeless, the issue of homelessness.
Well, I mean, that begs another question, then what is? And what this new ruling by the Ninth Circuit is leading a lot of cities to have to kind of rethink is you have to be offering some sort of place to stay before you can charge. So
there has to be an option.
You have to get them a bed or at least try to get them some sort of emergency shelter. Now, here's the thing. In Phoenix, a lot of times that's already full.
We just had some of the people in from CAS, the large homeless shelter complex. I believe they call it a campus in downtown Phoenix. But they'll be the first ones to tell you. And they segregate it. You know, they have like males. They have women with children. They run it near capacity, and there's people that can't get in.
So, in essence, what's now happening from the court is that it's saying governments, law enforcement, can enforce a law that prohibits homeless people from sleeping on the street when no alternative shelter is available. Now, if you talk to advocates and law enforcement, a lot of times an arrest is not the first thing that happens. A lot of times trying to get them a bed is the first thing that happens. But what this could do then is force cities to have the law enforcement be trained to have a system to find those beds before citing them, because it would perpetuate what you said Chief Garcia was discussing.
That you just went from being homeless to a homeless criminal. You know, now, he goes, we didn't solve their homeless problem. We just added charges.
Phoenix is a major metropolitan city. Tempe actually has, you know, is a big city as well. You start getting out to places like where I live in Gilbert.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there are shelters out there that would suffice for an evening. So at that point in time, if there is no alternative shelter for them, then you may not be able to site.
Listen, I can acknowledge and understand that it is inconvenient, and there are issues with homeless people in individual communities. I tend to side with the thought process, again, like Chief Garcia, that criminalizing being homeless doesn't solve the homeless issue.
But
I know one of the other problems is that even if there are beds available, we know, there are some people that they do not choose that.
Yes.
Can you force them to live in a shelter? Can you force them to be it gets down to the fundamental argument is, in the United States of America, is being homeless a crime? Are we going to make it criminal to sleep outside, to sleep, quote unquote, on the street, in a park, on a bus pass? Are we going to criminalize the fact that you don't have a home? And that's
we have.
Yeah.
We have.
And we've done it from the hue and cry from people that are not in my backyard. They don't want to see them. They don't have any desire to solve the homeless problem. They just don't want to have to see it in their own neighborhood. And I don't know if that's a good enough excuse.
Yeah, but I mean, we also have to be real that not every homeless person is one individual who is down on their luck, who is just out there because of circumstance. I mean, there are individuals who I don't know what the percentage is, I'll be honest, but are dangerous or have some sort of mental issue.
Oh, sure.
And I don't want them in my neighborhood. I don't.
But if they haven't committed a crime, I understand if they commit crimes, I don't think we're having an argument. But is the crime of being homeless alone enough?
I think I think you touched upon something, though, and that is, what is the solution? And I think that is the multi-million dollar question. Because if there are beds available, which I recognize that that's not always the case, but if there are beds available and you don't want a bed and you are sleeping on the street, is that a citable offense? Well, some cities have made it so.
Yeah.
And it seems as though we will eventually have another kind of court case coming from the state of Arizona challenging the constitutionality of that. And then where are we? This is a prolific problem, and it's getting worse in the city of Phoenix. It's getting worse around the country, and it deserves our attention. I'm not looking to criminalize individuals because of their circumstance. I don't know what the solution is. It's not a matter of me not wanting to see it. Okay, my eyes can see it. I've seen a lot in my years. That's not it. I'm looking at the safety issues. And not everybody who's on the street is a criminal. Believe me, I'm not trying to make broad assumptions here. But that's what makes this topic a very tricky one.
And I'll acknowledge your feelings. But having said that, until they commit a crime, they're not dangerous and they're not violent and they haven't done anything wrong. Again, is the mere fact that they don't have a home the crime in and of itself? And I think you're seeing more and more, again, communities struggling with that idea. A person who steals and is homeless is a thief. The fact that they're homeless is secondary to the fact that they're a thief. I can separate the two. We see, and we keep running into, more and more instances of, and some of these court cases are, from people that have committed no other crime than have nowhere else to go. That is the crime they have committed. There are ordinances in some cities where you can't sleep in your car. You can't park on the side of the road and go to sleep. You know, sleep on a city street. Mm-hmm. That you can't sleep in a park. You can't sleep on a bench.
Yeah.
And so we've criminalized. And there are, of a million homeless people, there's a million reasons why they're homeless. You know, each one is a unique individual circumstance. Most of the ones, and I've worked with Cass and been down there before. Most of the people you run into are homeless. The men, the women, even the moms with children would tell you they're honest. I mean, they have to live in a world of honesty. They will tell you, I've made a lot of decisions that have put me where I am today. They are self-aware. The man didn't do this to me. I made some mistakes along the way, and I've put myself in this position. Many of them are wanting to come out of it. I heard somebody say something interesting. One of these counselors that deals with them. and said, you know, there's a common misconception that some people out there choose to be homeless. They choose to live on the street, right? And she said, that's pride talking. No one chooses to live under a bridge. No one chooses to sleep on a park bench. They justify that, and they will tell you it's because, you know, this is the lifestyle I want to lead. But that's pride talking. And that's them still not owning up to maybe the fact that there could be something else, but they're just not ready for it. They're not prepared for it. But again, can Phoenix, will Valley Cities ban homelessness? For
they
lack
already
of better
have. It's right now, it's a matter of enforce are they going it. To rethink it?
Right. And how stringently will they enforce people for, again, the crime of just nowhere else to go? I tend to come down on, again, the idea that you've just taken someone who has a problem of homelessness and you just added a criminal charge to their homeless issue. How's that help the homeless part? It doesn't. The Girl Scouts are feuding with the Boy Scouts. No, it's not. They're not having an Indian leg wrestle somewhere. No, they're not. This isn't a brawl that broke out at a jamboree. This is in court, and it is a battle for the hearts and minds of young people. We'll tell you about Girl Scouts v. Boy Scouts.
Yeah. Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
So you may think it's a bunch of nothing. Hooey might be the terminology you use. The battle between Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts, and this goes back a while because I want to say it started with the Boy Scouts, and I'm not trying to blame them. I'm saying I started with them where they kind of tried to rebrand themselves, Pamela, because membership had been dropping, not as many boys were joining, and they wanted to open themselves up to more members because members mean money.
Well, yeah, members, in fact, do mean money. And what I'm learning about all of this is just how much of a business the Girl Scouts and the Boy Scouts are.
Okay.
So the Boy Scouts have become more inclusive. They ended their ban on openly gay and transgender scouts. They've been declining in membership for quite some time. Well, you may have heard as well that the Boy Scouts are now just being called Scouts, and they will allow young girls to join the ranks as well. So now what you've got going on is the Girl Scouts going, whoa, you're creating all this confusion out there and you're infringing upon our trademark.
Are you purposely trying to confuse people that when they go to sign up for Scouts, they get confused as to which one?
Well, okay, you tell me. Here's an example. Okay. So there was a Boy Scout volunteer from a church in Virginia. And he was inviting young men and women to, you know, like an information session to get people, Boy Scouts, prepared to include older girls for the first time. Mm-hmm. Okay. The church scoutmaster wrote, "We would be chartering one of our Girl Scouts BSA troops."
Okay.
Girl Scouts BSA.
Because BSA stands for Boy Scouts of America, right?
Right.
Okay.
So that label caught the eye of a Girl Scout volunteer, forwarded it on to, you know, one of the council leadership. And the woman thought, well, would parents think the event was affiliated with the Girl Scouts?
I could see where you might be confused by
that. Would they assume the two groups had merged?
It's just Scouts.
So the woman went to the meeting. She went to the meeting in uniform. And went to talk because she wanted to make sure she set the record straight. There's a lot of confusion and a lot of competition that's being created. And I didn't know that this was even a thing.
Well, I think the confusion, if you're being fair, the Boy Scouts think they're going to benefit from that confusion.
Well, it's no longer Boy Scouts.
Right. But
it's Scouts, but BSA.
Right, but I'm trying to distinguish them for the purpose of our discussion. They're still Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. That the Boy Scouts are trying to muddy the water with the name change, with recruiting girls, with using some of this terminology.
Here's what this is coming down to for me, and it becomes the fight for survival. Which one is going to survive? If the Scouts have boys and girls.
Right.
And the Girl Scouts are just girls. And the way that the Scouts are marketing themselves are all about outdoors and adventure.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they've got leaders who will go out and do these camps, whereas the Girl Scouts don't always have leaders that will go out and do these camps.
Well, isn't one of the fundamental issues that fewer people are involved in scouting?
Yeah.
Whether you're a boy, a girl, join the Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, whatever, that it's just not the thing that it once was.
It has dropped tremendously, and it's dropped for a variety of different reasons. But I mean, some of which you've got different organizations that are no longer supporting the Boy Scouts and have kind of pulled out. But I think that also, you know, when I was growing up, I was a brownie. I never got to the Girl Scout level, but I was a brownie.
Okay. What are the levels in the Girl Scouts?
I don't know.
Is it just brownie and the Girl
Scout? I was
a
horrible brownie.
Oh, okay.
There was
Boy Scouts, it's Cub Scout,
Daisies?
Lee Below Boy Scout.
I think it's Daisy's brown. I don't know.
Fair enough.
As you can tell,
the hierarchy, the Girl Scout hierarchy.
I only got that far and then I dropped out. But I mean, back then, there wasn't a whole lot of competition for like my time, I guess you could say. I mean, my job was school. My parents always made that abundantly clear to me. Your one job is to get good grades. Followed by that, you know, when I was younger, I played softball.
Okay.
But
you had activities, you did.
You know, and I danced. Softball probably when I was a little bit earlier. But I would dance, and then I was in brownies.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, though, there is so much competition for kids' time.
Agreed.
That I think that's also kind of playing into why membership has dropped. Because there's so much competition for that extracurricular activity time, of which kids are already overscheduled. If you're talking about learning how to tie knots and go out camping, well, that doesn't speak to a lot of kids these days. It definitely did me, but things
change. I think of my nephew, Frank the Tank. He does downhill mountain biking.
Yeah.
He does skateboarding. He does like adventure camp. Joining the Boy Scouts, learning how to tie a knot. I'm exaggerating to prove the point. I don't know if it keeps his attention long enough.
I think that's a big, good point.
He likes to jump his bike down, going down ski runs.
But there's a scout war.
Yeah.
Who will win?
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. Yeah, well, it's like a race to the bottom, sadly enough. It's kind of disappointing to see them fighting amongst each other. So the Heisman Trophy was announced over the weekend, and almost as soon as college football's best player was celebrating, guess what? Stop me if you heard it before. Old tweets started to resurface. Is there an endgame in any of this? We're going to talk about it. It's coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Well, nobody from U of A or ASU won the Heisman Trophy again, but somebody did. University of Oklahoma quarterback Kyler Murray was the big winner.
The 2018 Heisman Trophy is awarded to Kyler Murray of Oklahoma University.
Yeah, and he had about a couple of hours to enjoy getting the nod.
Right. This is crazy. This is an honor. Something that, you know, I'll never forget and something I'll always cherish for the rest of my life.
That changed pretty darn quickly. Well, I mean, I don't know, because almost immediately after winning the Heisman Trophy, stop me if you've heard this before, tweets started to pop up that he had made. We're figuring out, what, 5-6 years ago?
Yeah, about 5-6 years ago.
When he was
yeah.
14 years old. A 14-year-old boy. What, he would have been a freshman in high school maybe? Right? Where, I hope you're sitting down for this. Can we say this stuff on the radio? I'm joking. He used the term queer in a derogatory way in a back and forth, if you will, on Twitter with some other guys.
And no,
I mean, am I diminishing it?
No, because I wanted to know what it was. Because when you hear about a lot of times the headlines, right? Homophobic slurs or misogynistic tweets.
Right.
You just hear the headline and you're allowing someone else to fill in the blanks for you. You fill them in yourself going, oh, he must have used this word or he must have used that word.
And here's what I want to.
And when you actually read them, you go, okay, it's not appropriate, but is it outrageous?
Well, is it homophobic? Because I'm going to make the argument on behalf of a Kyler Murray, who I do not know, didn't watch play football, and have never met, that is it homophobic to, in 2011, when these tweets went out, by the way, roughly 2011, 2012 I'm looking at, to use the term queer?
Yeah, it's one of those words that, I mean, there's a show called Queer Eye. That's where I get a little like, okay.
But does using that word in and of itself
mean it's homophobic?
Mean that you are a homophobe?
It means that you're an idiot, but a homophobe, I don't know.
At 14, people use a lot of language that maybe they don't understand it.
Here's, I think, the bigger conversation that needs to be had. I'm not defending what Kyler Murray wrote when he was 14 years old. But where's the outrage? This guy can throw a football. Okay.
Yeah. Apparently, he's good at it. We'll go with that.
He's not writing legislation for Oklahoma.
Fair.
So okay. It's one of those okay. things where, why do I?
What's the standard you're holding your football players to?
Why? But I mean, why do we need to know who he is?
He did apologize, of course, on Twitter. I apologize for the tweets that have come to light tonight from when I was 14 and 15. I used a poor choice of a word that doesn't reflect who I am or what I believe it. I don't intend to single out any individual or group. Can I use some others? Because I would acknowledge that, and I think it's fair to say that language evolves. And words that we don't use today were relatively commonplace before. And dare I say, there might be words we're using today that we go back and go, oh my God, I can't believe we were using that word.
Yeah, I think
like language changes.
Language does change, and the intent behind it changes as well. There are certain words that my grandmother used to use.
Oh, my.
That you would never use today.
Now, I didn't tweet them, but I'll go ahead and admit to it because, again, I don't live in a world of fear like that. I was around, and I can remember, that the word gay meant something other than you were homosexual.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, that's gay. Stop being gay. That's gay. It became like stupid. It became, I'm trying to think of what is the
ridiculous.
Right.
Yeah.
That we used it in a way. And then, by the way, it became, you know, you shouldn't use a word like that. I go, okay, that's a solid argument. I won't use a word mm-hmm. like that again. Here's another one. Retarded. I know that I grew up, and when I was a kid, I'm sure I used that term. And I used it as a way to mock or make fun of somebody who I thought was acting stupid, doing something. You see what I'm saying? And now I would not use that terminology to call somebody that. The meaning of the word didn't necessarily change. How we use it in society changed.
So imagine social media being around when you were 14, Bruce.
Oh, my.
And you using the word retarded or gay in the manner of which you just said.
Which I think
said.
I called my brother both.
Right. But you were tweeting at him.
Right.
And then somebody goes back and mines your past social media comments.
When I win the Heisman?
We're living in reality, okay, not the fantasy.
I hope we're not holding our breath on me winning
but
the Heisman.
But you get my point.
Yes.
You get my point.
Yes.
And I think it also, listen, if you are a leader of the free world, yeah, I care about what you write in tweets. If you are in a position of authority as a police chief, and the decisions you make have an impact on a wide variety of people, I care what you say in your tweets. If you could throw a football, you know what? Like, okay, dude, not that I'm giving you a pass, but what you do with your life has zero bearing on what I do with mine. I think it's also a reminder as we come up on the new year, as people put together their yearly budget, maybe you should go back and have like the New Year's resolution of scrubbing your social media every year because you don't know how the connotation of a word is going to change in
future
years.
I don't know what words, I'm not allowed to use.
Get rid of it.
If I thought that this Heisman Trophy winner was homophobic and was his racial slur or his homophobic slurs were specifically making fun of a gay kid at school, I think you'd have an argument.
That's bullying.
He was going back and forth with some other guys and called him queer. I don't think he meant it literally as in, I think you two are
It just seems like they have these things all ready to go and they just release them.
When you win the Heisman.
When you get very, very high, somebody's going to knock you down really, really low.
Maybe Kyler Murray can host the Oscars. Have we thought about that?
Geez.
Is there an opportunity there? Maybe not. Kids are throwing away school lunches. Really? And the food going to waste? It's exactly what you think they're wasting. We'll talk about it next.
KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
The numbers are staggering. The federal government spends about $13 billion with a B, dollars a year, on school lunches. Parents chip in another $6 billion, and individual states pony up hundreds of millions more. That is a hell of a lot of money going into school lunches, and I don't know any human who's ever told me, wow, that was an amazing school lunch. We really ought to have more of that.
Yeah.
Mwah! Brilliant. The tots were amazing. The Salisbury steak tastes like Salisbury steak. There is an issue, though, with school lunches. Kids are wasting them.
Yeah, a lot of the food is getting thrown away. A lot of it ends up in the trash. Waste roughly 25% to 45% of just the regular school lunch.
It seems like a lot.
You think that's a lot.
Okay.
But wait,
there's more.
There's more.
Yep, here we go.
Start taking a look at the vegetable waste.
Oh, this is not going to surprise me.
Well, okay, what do you think it is?
Is it 100%?
It's 90.
Okay,
that's
90%.
Close. Yeah, we're
not
eating. I'm
not eating vegetables. It's no. Hard
so,
no.
So what's going on that kids are wasting or throwing away so much food at school? Well, they've kind of broken it down to several different reasons.
Okay.
And the first one, yeah, I can attest to.
I'm ready.
A lot of kids don't have a whole lot of time to eat.
Oh, literally, the time to eat.
Yeah, if you don't have the time to eat the food, what happens to the food?
You eat the things that you like first, and whatever's left over goes in the garbage because you run out of time.
I was amazed at the lack of time my daughter Riley has.
Give me an example.
You know, I think she's supposed to have 30, I might have the numbers off, but I think she's supposed to have like 30 minutes in the cafeteria, okay?
Okay.
Now, that's in the cafeteria.
That's not eating. That's in the cafeteria. Okay.
And
okay,
so there's a line. You got to wait in line to get your food, and then you got to go sit down. And a lot of times, she might have like 15 minutes to eat, 20, 15 minutes. If it's 15 minutes, one in seven students has less than 15 minutes to eat. And I know that it's something that like my neighbor and I have talked about with her oldest son and why he was so hungry when he came home from school. It's because he's not given the time to actually eat. Now, Riley likes to dilly-dally when it comes to food, so if she actually focused on that 15 minutes, she'd probably get some of it done.
But you're assuming that, again, kids, elementary, junior high school kids, are going to sit down and approach eating lunch like a task. And, okay, I've got exactly 15 minutes. I got to get through this. That's not how they
especially
do it,
Especially
when
they get to see some of their friends for the first
time. They're socializing. Yeah, exactly. There's gossip going on.
Now, all right. So that could explain a little bit why the 25 to 45% of the school lunches get thrown away. Now, the vegetables, on the other hand, with the 90% going to waste, I think that's coming down to eating habits. A lot of kids are throwing away the fruit and vegetables without even touching them.
Okay.
And so why? Well, a lot of kids don't eat like the apples and broccoli at home. So why would they go to school and eat it?
Absolutely. How would you possibly, quote unquote, force kids to eat that stuff knowing the time constraint and just, what are you going to have, lunch monitors that walk around smacking kids on the back of the knuckles with a ruler if they haven't finished off their broccoli?
Right. And there are a lot of times where Riley will tell me, I ate the banana. And I'm like, well, what else did you? Well, the rest of it was really gross.
Right.
The
because
quality.
That is, well, because that is subjective. I'll grant you that.
Oh, sure,
but
yeah.
How you like something prepared or whatever may not be the way the
you already opened
lovely
up
lunch ladies did.
The tots and the Salisbury steak, they're not winning any James Beard Awards anytime soon here, okay?
Well, it's a step. Well, I'm going to. If there are lunch people, not just lunch ladies, listening to us right now, I want to apologize ahead of time. And by apologize, I mean I'm probably not really apologizing. School lunches are a few notches below airplane food.
Yeah.
Right? No one ever bragged about their. I just don't see that. And I think it's fair to say kids can be finicky. And even if the quality, let's take that out of the equation. Maybe it's fine. It's fresh stuff. You're assuming everybody likes chicken parmesan? You're assuming, no, you put five kids in a room together, you got five different palates.
Where are you going to lunch where at school where you get chicken parm?
Well, I'm thinking of like the TV dinners where you like a microwave and a chicken parm. I'm thinking,
seriously?
You don't get chicken parm at
you
school?
You might get like a chicken quesadilla, a cheese and bean burrito. There's
really?
Some nuggets and tots. I mean, and that's the other
thing,
too.
I remember tots were a big deal. When we had tots, I skipped to school. I was like, yeah, it is a Wednesday tot day. Things are looking up. Can't wait for lunch period.
Since the government pays, though, for the amount of lunches served, mm-hmm. not the amount of lunches eaten.
Ooh.
There's really not a financial incentive to actually get kids to eat their food,
yeah,
which leads schools to settle for mediocre.
Can I tell you that I remember this as being a thing? We weren't allowed to have, like, maybe yours, junk at home.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff at school qualified as junk.
Yes, it does. It so does.
And so while I might not have loved the food, it was stuff that I would never get to eat at home.
Yeah, Riley's like, I had a muffin. I said, for what? She goes, lunch. A muffin?
They sold donuts at my school.
Yeah. Oh, mine too.
We didn't have donuts in the house I grew up in. That was like Christmas and New Year's rolled into one. I got a donut.
Chocolate milk.
Oh, it's
I
so
chocolate
good
milk at home.
When it touches your lips.
Uh-uh.
Oh.
So there's some changes that are going to be coming to the school lunches.
But they're still going to throw out the veggies.
Well, yeah. I mean, President Trump is changing some of the regulations that Michelle Obama put into play to try to make the lunches healthier.
More tots.
Yeah. You're going to see it. More pizza.
More tots. Who's going to be the next White House chief of staff as General John Kelly leaves? The list of people who don't want the job seems to be growing. We'll update you on that coming up next on Arizona's News Station.